is my high honor and my great privilege to present to the good people of Fort Worth our able, our beloved, our fearless leader of the United States and all the free world, the President of the United States.
Mr. Vice President, Jim Wright, Governor, Senator Yarborough, Mr. Botka, ladies and gentlemen, there are no faint hearts in Fort Worth, and I appreciate your being here this morning. Mrs. Kennedy is organizing herself. It takes longer, but of course she looks better than we do when she does it. But we appreciate your welcome. This city's been a great Western city. The defense of the West, cattle, oil, and all the rest. It has believed in strength in this city, and strength in this state, and strength in this country. What we're trying to do in this country and what we're trying to do around the world, I believe, is quite simple. And that is to build a military structure which will defend the vital interests of the United States. And in that great cause, Fort Worth, as it did in World War II, as it did in developing the best bomber system in the world, the B-58, and as it will now do in developing the best fighter system in the world, the TFX, Fort Worth will play its proper part.
Welcome to How to Be a Texan, Kevin. How in the world are you doing, buddy? Good to see you today on Zoom. We're on Zoom.
We're back on Zoom.
Man, this is great. Andrew, what's going on? You got your top hat on?
Yeah, I got my top hat on.
So, hey, Kevin, what I thought we'd talk about today was something, anyway, coming up in November. We're in November and we're about to hit it. We're about to see the commemoration of the JFK assassination in Dallas, which played a huge part on the history of Texas. So I thought we'd visit about that. It's not a terribly uplifting topic, Kevin, but I thought, you know, with the bad, we have to deal with some of the good too, right?
Well, you know, you can honor the man.
Right.
And, you know, we had the Steve Ray Vaughan episode that was, you know, there was some tragedy involved in that too, but you know, we're still able to honor the man. I think we can do that with JFK.
Dimebag Darrell. We had some tragedy there. We just did true. That one. A lot of that's tragedy. True. So we've dealt with tragedy well.
Yeah.
So, okay. So today I thought we'd talk about the JFK assassination. Let's go back a little bit and just talk about JFK's presidency, even though it was very brief. And then what the lasting impact on really Dallas has been as a result of the JFK assassination. Is that okay with you?
That sounds great.
Okay. Andrew, you good? Okay. All right.
I'm good.
Okay. Great. Great. Okay. So if you think about it, JFK was the youngest president ever elected. Did you know that?
Ever elected? Was he younger than Obama?
45. He was put in office at 45. I think Obama was 49 or 50.
I think he was like 47.
47. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obama was definitely young, but no, JFK was the 35th president. He was 45 years old when he came into office. He was extremely charismatic. He had a family history and legacy of being, political. His father, basically, I don't know how his father made all of his money, but he made a ton of money and he funded all of his campaigns. When you look at JFK's career, he started in the Massachusetts legislature. The House of Representatives from 47 to 53. Then he was a Massachusetts senator from 1953 to 1960. And then he was duly elected as the senator and the president, obviously President Trump senator. But, and I just read an article about that, you know, Ted Cruz, there was an article in the paper today about Ted Cruz in Texas that he may run for the president and senator at the same time. in 2024. Thought that was pretty interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah. So he became the youngest president in 1961. And then I just thought it would be interesting to talk about some of the priorities that he had and some of the really hairy issues that he faced during his brief 2.5-3 year presidency.
That was a pretty historic election too.
Yeah.
That was the first, you know, he was running against Nixon.
Okay.
So he beat Nixon.
Right.
Who then later on came back, you know, a decade later and won.
Are you saying there's hope for Trump to get a second term? Just kidding.
Trump's no Nixon. Thank God. No, we won't go there. So there was that. It was also the first televised presidential debates.
Right. He was the first Roman Catholic voted in, right?
First Catholic voted in. Yep. Okay. That's right. And the first virtual debate. You remember how there was such a big deal during this election about the virtual debate? And they actually did one where it was televised. And I think JFK was on the East Coast and Nixon was on the West Coast. This was not the first one. The first one, they were in the same room together.
Okay.
But maybe the second or third debate, they were actually on opposite sides, but they had the split screen on the TV. So I thought that was kind of interesting that here we are 60 years later and with all the technology where everyone's working on Zoom and we're even doing this on Zoom. But yet, one of our candidates didn't quite think that, we were quite ready for a virtual debate. I just thought that was funny.
That is crazy. 60 years later, literally.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then he was a very unique president. So he had a kind of a quick ascent in his political career. Before that, he was in the U.S. Navy Reserve from 1941 to 45. So that's during World War II. I believe he commanded a couple of different types of, you remember like the PT boats? Mm. And he was commander over those during his 4 year in the military during World War II. So that's a big deal. Then got the House, then the Senate, and then the president. And so out of his presidency, the 2.5-3 years that he was there, he really had 4 or 5 kind of major issues that occurred that I thought were, historic. The one that most people remember, well, they're really, in my mind, there are two. So you and I were born in 69, 70. So
70.
I was 69, you're 70. So we were not even around when Kennedy was president. But growing up, there were two things that I really thought of when I thought of JFK. I'm sorry, three. Besides the assassination, obviously, which is probably the most memorable thing of his presidency, which is terrible. But second was the challenge to get to the moon. And mm-hmm. then the other one was the Cuban Missile Crisis. Mm-hmm. And because everything I ever learned about in school was all about, oh my gosh, we were at the brink of a nuclear war with the USSR. And that, thank goodness, with the ending of the Cuban Missile Crisis, we got off the brink.
And this was, height of Cold War.
Cold War, right.
Yeah, it was... just, crazy times from that perspective. And to think that, we were that close to what the big fear was nuclear war, right?
Right.
And we had used nukes in World War II on Japan.
Right.
And so, I think, kind of having seen what the devastation could be, there was just this great fear that, the Soviet Union would be able to, basically attack us in our homeland, nuclear. And that's still, a threat from multiple countries today, but we're just more used to it, I think, and we've got better technology now. But I think back then it was very, very scary, almost on a daily basis. And
It was. Yeah, no, I think, unfortunately, over the last 60 years or 70 years, we've gotten more callous to the thought of nuclear war. I think terrorism really has kind of taken over the fear, with 9/11 and then just the fear of the unknown of, you know, North Korea or is Iran going to go crazy, you know?
Yep.
And I think it's that it's, and plus with the fall of the USSR into Russia, current day Russia, in my mind, it's, we just don't have the Cold War. We don't have the staunch enemy out there that the USA and the USSR really were. They were the two superpowers.
Yep.
And it seemed like at the time when Kennedy was in office, they were all divvying up Germany still. And so that's when the start of the wall in Berlin came up, where Russia, USSR came all the way from east. They had control of East Berlin. The Westerners were in West Berlin, and that's when the wall came up. It was constructed during Kennedy's time. Mm-hmm. And Kennedy made a big play with the military about bringing troops from Eastern Berlin, because we had troops still in Eastern Germany, I'm sorry, over to Berlin during the time, made a big show of it, but it really just continued to kind of cement, and the Cold War was well in effect. So those are the two big issues in my mind, the challenge. And when you and I talked about on NASA, you know, you played a little bit of Kennedy's speech, the short speech that he gave. I'm kidding. It was really long, but it was really good. It was a challenge to, by the end of this decade, we will send a man safely to the moon and return. And sure enough, that happened with Apollo 11 in 1969, and we went through all that on the NASA. So if you haven't listened to that, please go back and listen to that episode, because it was really interesting. So he challenged us to get to the moon and back, and that was all at the, because the Russians, again, they were already kind of moving out. They already sent the man into space and the, all that. So we responded to that with NASA, with the spin up of the Apollo missions and ultimately the moon. And then the Cuban Missile Crisis, and I won't belabor that, but it was 13 days. There's a great Kevin Costner film. Did you ever see that? It's called 13 Days.
And no.
Kevin Costner.
You know, I don't watch movies. I need to go.
Well, this, I think it was historically accurate. It was the guy that Oliver Stone made that movie. It was really, really good. And it just showed the drama of those 13 days where in Cuba, there were clearly Russian-delivered intercontinental ballistic missiles that were in Cuba that could directly impact the mainland. And over that 13 days, it's a great lesson in negotiations of brinksmanship of you know, what you can do to say, okay, well, if you don't do this, I'm going to do that. At the end of the day, there were two things that were negotiated. One, of moving out the ICBMs out of Cuba, and two, of, and this was really kind of under the, this was on the QT, that the U.S. agreed to move our ICBMs out of Turkey, pointed at USSR, away. So it was those two kind of pinch points that were drawn back, and we got off the brink of a nuclear holocaust, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah,
the Oliver Stone did the JFK movie also in the early
90s. He did. I may be wrong, but he did 13 days.
No, he did 13 days. Yeah, I just looked it up.
Okay. Thanks,
Pat. He did that, and then he did also the JFK.
Well, it was good. I mean, it was really, really good, and kind of just super intense. And Costner, he doesn't have a really great Massachusetts accent, but he did a nice job. The other couple of things that I thought were pretty interesting that he did, one was the integration of the University of Alabama. This is when JFK and MLK partnered together because, of course, the civil rights movement was going on in the early 60s and even late 60s. We'll talk more about that with LBJ. But he did integrate the University of Alabama, and that was a huge deal in itself. So,
you know, I think the racial issues were, it was pretty contentious in Texas during JFK. Right. And, you know, part of the concern with having him go down there was because of those issues. And I was reading, I think it was our Secretary of State, Adlai Stevenson.
Yeah.
Was in Dallas maybe a couple of weeks or a month before. He literally got attacked.
Yeah, I saw the video. He got whacked with a poster sign, literally got whacked in the head by some guy holding a sign.
Yeah, yeah. So it was kind of, you know, there was kind of, Texas was kind of nuts during this time.
And well, that's what JFK on the morning of his assassination, he told Jackie, he said, I think over breakfast, he said, honey, we're going over to the city of nuts, literally yep. called him that because yep. they had so many protesters and just kind of out of control stuff.
And he was in Fort Worth, right? And I think if you ask people in Fort Worth today what they think of Dallas, they'll say it's a city of nuts.
Boy, that still holds. That's where my office is in Fort Worth, and that perception holds pretty well. So, a bunch of nuts in Dallas. So anyway, getting to the actual assassination, and we won't go. I mean, you know, you all have seen it time and time again with the slow mo and all that, and the magic bullet theory, and all that. But what happened was he was in Fort Worth. He and Jackie had stayed the night. They had had some meetings. He had a speech the morning of, I believe, in Fort Worth. And then
he went out into a parking lot and had a speech. And that was the clip that I played at the beginning of the episode.
Okay.
You know, where he was talking to this crowd in Fort Worth and, you know, was talking about how much, you know, how cool Fort Worth was and how Jackie was still back in the hotel getting herself together. He said, it takes her a little bit longer, but she looks a lot better than I do.
Nice.
When she gets done. And so that was a brief thing. And then he went into the hotel to a breakfast meeting there and gave another speech that was more on, I think, national defense or something like that.
Nice. And then tell us, you and I were giggling about the flight. So tell us about the flight.
Yeah. And then he goes and, you know, gets an Air Force One, I think at Meacham Field.
In Fort Worth. Yeah.
In Fort Worth. Yeah. And then flies over to Dallas to Love Field. So it's like a, it says it's a 13-minute flight. I don't even see how it could take 13 minutes. I mean, it's just kind of like up and down.
Yeah. It's mainly 13 minutes. I mean, you know, a minute to get up, 5 minutes to get over there, and maybe 8 minutes to get down or whatever.
But yeah, yeah.
Crazy. And they just wanted the plane there because of the kind of the effect of having the president get off the Air Force One.
Yeah, I think they wanted to kind of have that visual of him getting off to, you know, and they had a crowd there that was behind a barricade, you know, so that they could, you know, have the scene of the president walking off of Air Force One with the crowd cheering, stuff like that, you know. So nice. I think that's why they wanted it, I guess, because, I mean, really, you should just hop in a motorcade and drive, you know, especially with a presidential motorcade, you can get from downtown Fort Worth to downtown Dallas and, I don't know, 20 minutes, 25 minutes.
Well, it's 40 miles. So, but unless, you know, an hour or less, but regardless. And so then they get off Air Force One and then take the motorcade from Love Field, which is off Lemon Avenue, which it's not far from.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misspoke. It was not Meacham Field. It was Carswell Air Force Base.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Carswell. Okay.
That's where he took off from. Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, regardless, so then you get him over to Dallas. He gets off of Air Force One. The motorcade goes, and I don't remember, nor did I look it up, where he was actually going to. I'm sure he was going to some something where he would have a speech or a meeting or a lunch or something, because it was 12:30, I think, when he got assassinated, when he was shot. So, coming up through, and I've driven this literally a billion times.
Okay. So yeah, here, I've got it right here. So it was a 10-mile route.
Okay.
And I'm reading this from the JFK Library page. It says the procession left the airport, traveled along a 10-mile route that wound through downtown Dallas on the way to the Trademark.
Okay.
Yeah. Which I assume is
that's like the Apparel Mart now.
Yeah, I think it's over in that area, which would make sense, right? Because you come out of Dealey Plaza there, and you would just hop on 35.
Yeah, and you got about a mile over, and it's to the big International Apparel Mart and all that.
Yeah, and it says he was scheduled to speak at a luncheon. There.
Okay, because that place is huge.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice. Okay, so again, he's in an open air vehicle. You know, he comes up from this tunnel. Into literally off Main Street into Dealey Plaza, going through kind of the big buildings of downtown. And it kind of goes, everybody's seen it, it kind of goes up and turn to the left. And I think as soon as he kind of turned the corner, that's when he was shot twice. And so, you know, he had his bodyguards, I think Clint, what's his face? I just literally watched a video with that guy. I thought that was interesting. He protected five different presidents. I thought that was fascinating. Secret Service guy. Rumors were that he and Jackie were in love, but nothing founded on that. But I thought that was interesting. So he was shot. You know, everybody says that it was Oswald that did it from the, what's it called? The school board, school book
depository.
Depository. Yeah. And so that's a huge tour. Those Dealey Plaza and the school book depository are two huge tourist sites for downtown Dallas. I mean, people come from literally all over the planet just to go and walk that. To me, it's uber creepy, but it is what it is. So, you know, he was shot twice. They immediately speed off, get to Parkland. You said by 1 o'clock. No, it was, they announced it. He was by 1 o'clock. So
by 1 o'clock, yeah, a Catholic priest did last rites and pronounced him dead.
Yeah.
At 1 p.m.
Dallas. Yeah, so that's quick. And so from Dealey Plaza to Parkland. Parkland is our big county hospital and still is. It's fantastic in really just in downtown Dallas. So got him there probably within a few minutes.
It's over there in that medical area where the Apparel Mart is, right? Isn't that?
It is. I mean, it's right by the Apparel Mart. Yeah. So, got there. Of course, he's no longer alive. And that's it. So that's about 1 o'clock. So 12:30 to 1 o'clock. Again, it's an eerie, you know, destination for tourists. We have a ton of tourists that go there every year, which is great. But, to me, it's still creepy. Even when I drive through it now, it's still creepy. And it's 100 years later, it feels like it's still creepy because I know what happened right there. So then you said that LBJ was sworn in once, I think they actually got his by the president's body to Air Force One really quick. So, I mean, if you think about it, shot at 12:30, pronounced at 1, and then back on the plane by 2:30 with LBJ there, and they swear LBJ in at Air Force One at Love Field by a local justice. At 2:30. So that all happens very, very quick, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So that's uber dark. Okay. So that happened 57 years ago. And so then
with that swearing in, you know, one thing that happened after this is that you've heard talk recently in this election about the 25th Amendment, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that did not exist. And that was added after. In the aftermath of the Kennedy assassination. Because they really had there was really nothing in the Constitution that talked about what would happen to a president, you know, or how to replace a president, right? There was traditions, and I think it might have, I can't remember who the first president was that was assassinated, but that there was some debate with that as to what role the vice president would actually play. Is he actually become the president, or is he just kind of, you know, not legit? And whoever was the VP at the time, you know, kind of was very forceful and said, no, I am the president of the United States. And he had a judge swear him in, and he kind of forced the issue. Right. And then it was just kind of left open for, you know, forever. And literally in the aftermath of JFK is when they finally got together and added the 25th Amendment that actually describes, you know, what needs to happen.
The chain of authority.
If a president is assassinated or if he's mentally unable to execute the job. So that's where that amendment came from.
That's interesting that it took all the way to 1963, because you think about the assassinations that we had prior to that. And we had... I should know this, how many presidents have been assassinated, but you think Lincoln should be the first one. I don't know that he was the first one, but I'm thinking he was. And you think that, you know, and then there was that great big fat guy.
I just looked it up. Yep. Lincoln was the first.
Yeah, but then there was a great big fat guy that, you know, when we were talking about the worst presidents, he was it assassination or was he just so fat and terrible shape that he just died 30 days terrible. In office? No, I'm not kidding. It was one. He was one of the worst presidents. He's the one with like the 7-hour inauguration speech.
So here's the presidents who died in office. Abraham Lincoln was the first U.S. president to be assassinated. 16 years later, James Garfield was shot. He survived for 2 months after being shot, and then he died in office.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so I think that's the guy that you may be thinking about.
No, the fat out of shape guy was awful, and he just died 30 days in. It was the shortest tenured president, and I think he just died of, you know, gout or something awful. So
yeah, 8 presidents have died. 4 were assassinated. 4 died of natural causes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, no need to belabor.
So I'm not sure. So, you know, who was the first to actually die? I think it was William Henry Harrison was the first that died.
That's him. That's the guy.
So he died. He was the first.
He was in office for like
30 days,
like a couple months or something, right? 3 days.
It was something ridiculously short. And he remember, Andrew, he's got the longest inauguration speech. It was like 4 months. Yeah, it was quick, and he was in terrible health.
It was his vice president that kind of forced the issue and said, you know, I'm president now.
Right.
And he actually on his own orchestrated to have a judge swear him in because there was so much debate over it.
Oh, wow.
And that so is then they strong. They just carried on that tradition forever. But then I think after JFK, they said, you know what, we really need to put something in place because there's really nothing. And if we get some, you know, lunatic that wants to, you know, not carry forward our traditions, that could be a big problem.
Right.
And so they actually put it in place.
Boy, that's interesting. Because then you think about there. Well, and that one where the president was shot and 2 months later died. So that's 2 months of the unknown. Here we had literally an hour and a half, 90 minutes of no president.
That's crazy.
That's really interesting. So,
and the Cold War, right? I mean, that's freaky.
Yeah. Yeah. And so there's all these conspiracy theories over that. And Kevin and I are not going to go into that today, but they're terribly fascinating. You know, LBJ, the Russians, the CIA. The CIA hated JFK, so there's a theory up around the CIA plotted after the Bay of Pigs failed in Cuba, the Cuban Missile Crisis. It could have been the Cubans, you know.
Why did the CIA not like JFK?
Because of the Bay of Pigs. So when you look at the Bay of Pigs, you know, and JFK claimed it, he owned it. We sent in a secretive force to overthrow the up and coming Castro and the communists coming up, and it failed miserably. Our guys got killed, just whacked, and it was CIA led, but it was a total epic failure. So if you look up the Bay of Pigs, there's a lot of hard feelings over that that carried over to they and LBJ got together and they formed the magic bullet, and that's why they, you know. So,
yeah, I'm not a conspiracy theory guy at all. And
no,
I think
me either.
I've always thought that, you know, I think one thing that may have helped kind of fuel the fire around the conspiracies is that, you know, people saw on live TV as they, you know, they had arrested Oswald, and as he's being transferred, you know, Jack Ruby walks up and pulls out a pistol and shoots him in point blank range, and that's Oswald's dead.
That's right. Right.
So then there was never a trial of this guy. Nobody ever actually heard him be interrogated and understand the details. And I think that has added to
the mystique.
People were saying, you know, what does Ruby have to hide? What's he involved in? And
yeah.
You
know. And then I think he later died in jail, but not by gunfire, but it adds to the mystique of it and just the marksmanship of it in general, because you think about it, was 2 shots. He was on the move. It was unbelievably accurate from a pretty long way. And I'm a hunter. I shoot all the time.
Yeah, that's true too.
The magic bullet alone, the track of the magic bullet is fascinating. If you actually look at how damaging that one bullet was that went through Kennedy and then killed another, the person, I can't remember, the politician in the front seat, front passenger seat. I mean, the magic bullet theory alone is unbelievable.
Have you seen the Seinfeld take on that?
No.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. It came out right after, you know, shortly after the JFK movie in the early 90s.
Yeah.
And it's just, I won't even explain it. It sounds so stupid if you don't know the story, but you know, they reenact this whole thing and it's, you know, actually Keith Hernandez from the Yankees.
Yeah.
One of the guys becomes friends with Keith Hernandez and somehow Keith Hernandez is involved in this story where he's walking out of Yankee Stadium and, you know, somebody spits on him and they turn it into this whole JFK thing. And it was actually Newman who spit on the guy it's just crazy. I wish I had the audio to play it. I'll send you a link.
Why does that not surprise me?
At one point, Jerry takes on the role of the prosecutor and he's like, you know, that must have been one magic loogie.
No, what it was is it was Kramer that got spit on, and Kramer thought that it was Keith Hernandez.
Oh, okay.
But it ended up being someone else. There was a second spitter.
A second spitter?
Yeah, they said there was a second spitter on the gravelly knoll or something like that.
Yeah, the grassy knoll. Okay. Well, so it is interesting. We won't cover any of the conspiracy theories here, but the trajectory of the bullets, the marksmanship of it all, are very, very interesting to ponder for sure. And just the cleanliness of taking Oswald out almost immediately to just cap it off and say, "Map, that's it. It's all good. We figured it out. Nothing to look at here." You know, it just has a lot of mystique to it. Yep. But anyway, let's wrap up by saying that first of all, it's a terrible, terrible thing. So we grow up, you know, Dallas area people, and the mystique of that, of the JFK assassination, still lingers. Now, the question of, you know, it was considered literally the city of hate after that, Dallas was, and it maintained that relationship or that image until two things came up. One was Tom Landry and the Dallas Cowboys came on in the late 60s. So that 5 to 7 year period from 63 to 70, when the Cowboys came to North Texas and Tom Landry took them, and then Roger Staubach got here, Dandy Don and all that, and they started winning. And then all of a sudden it's America's team with Roger Staubach, and people love the Dallas Cowboys. But you had that terrible stigma of Dallas. And then, you know, I've talked about the series Dallas with J.R. Ewing and the Ewing family and how literally it captured the world's attention with that series Dallas and who shot J.R. and all that. Everybody loved the series Dallas. So I think it recovered with those two things a bit, but you still have the stigma of the JFK assassination that'll always be with Dallas.
Yeah. One of the first political statements I ever heard, I was 10 years old. Yeah. So I was born in 70. So I was 10 years old in 1980. And Reagan had the Republican National Convention at Dallas that year. Hmm. And I remember my dad saying, and I don't know why this stuck in my head as a 10-year-old kid, just stuck in my head. I remember my dad telling someone, "I'm really concerned about them having the convention here, because if some nut shoots Reagan, then, you know," I can't remember how he finished it, but it was about, you know, Dallas just forever going down as the place where presidents go to die.
Yeah.
And that just stuck with me as a kid. And I remember, you know, during that time, there was concern about having a major political convention here because we still weren't over it. You know, that was already 20 years later, or not even quite 20 years later.
Yeah.
But
that stigma stuck. Yeah,
it stuck.
Yeah. Well,
where was Reagan whenever? Where was Reagan whenever the assassination attempt on him happened?
I think he was in D.C.
That was in D.C. Dallas,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, in D.C.
Yeah, it was D.C.
Because they took him to, I think they took him to Walter Reed, right?
Yeah. And he had one of his guys go down with a shot to the head and Secret Service and Reagan guy, you know. So, yeah, that was a big deal. Thank goodness he didn't die during that. But
yeah.
But yeah, no, it still is a stigma, and it's sad when one of your leading tourist sites is a site of where a great president was murdered. I mean, that's not anything we should be proud of. But hey, it is what it is. So
there's a big memorial there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think Dallas has tried to do a good job of honoring JFK.
Right.
You know, so there's a memorial right there, giant memorial.
It's beautiful.
The depository is a museum.
Yeah.
I've not done it. It's a shame that I haven't done it. I never took my kids there. What a terrible parent.
Then again, are you really? Hey, let's go look at the place where one of our presidents was murdered.
Yeah.
I went there
for the first time not long ago.
Really?
The museum, but to the memorial.
Yeah.
It was during, I was part of one of the Black Lives Matter protests, and we walked down there, and there were like a bunch of speakers over there and stuff.
Nice. In Plaza.
So it was pretty wild. We all like as a group like went and like knelt at the X like on the road there.
Yeah.
We like knelt there and we had like a moment of silence and stuff. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool. Okay.
I had a guy who was in town for business years ago, and we had some meetings over in Dallas. And so he rode with me, and he said, you know, hey, I've never been to Dallas. You know, can you drive me by that Dealey Plaza? And I said, sure. You know, so literally we were coming from downtown Dallas. And so, I mean, when you exit through there, you go on the exact route.
That's right.
And we pulled out there and his face, he was like, oh my God, this is the exact route. And we were going back north. So we took 35 north coming out of there. And we drove by Parkland on the way. He was like, oh, wow, this is crazy.
Yeah. No, it's if you see it and you literally can drive it every day. Because I worked in downtown Dallas for decades and I would literally drive that every day to work. And it's sobering. So. All right. Well, hey, Kevin, Andrew, appreciate the time on honoring JFK and hate to do it on the day he was assassinated. But, you know, it's part of Texas aura, that's for sure.
You forgot to mention one of the things that helped improve Dallas's image also.
Oh, the cheerleaders?
Well, yeah. No, I mean, you know, the space program, you know, Houston played a big role in the space program.
Yeah.
During the 60s. And I think after people got to recognize how nasty they were down there.
Oh, my gosh.
They're like, oh, maybe Dallas ain't so bad after all.
Another dig on poor Houston. Golly, that's a far reach right there.
Why are y'all so nasty down there? I've never had anyone answer that question for me.
So wrong. All right. Well, hey, appreciate y'all listening to us. We appreciate any reviews you guys, especially for this awesome episode. So.
All right. Thanks for listening. Look us up on Spotify, Apple Podcast, everywhere else where you can get a podcast.
Your reviews. Man, we've gotten some awesome reviews.
Yeah. So. I love those reviews.
Yeah. Don't send it
going.
It's no good. Just only
keeps
good
me going every day.
All right. See y'all.
Adios.